world has awakened to the need to focus on women's advancement, as companies with more gender-balanced leadership are more likely to outpace their peers. Hello, I'm Chester Elton, and with me is my dear friend and co-author, Adrian Gostick.
Well, thanks, Chess. Yeah, today just 10% of Fortune 500 CEOs are women, and less than 30% of senior leaders. Well, how can women ascend to the highest levels of leadership? Today, we talk with a CEO about that. As always, we hope the time you spend with us will help reduce the stigma of anxiety at work and in your personal life.
And this podcast is going to be a delight because with us is our dear, dear friend, Jennifer McCollum. Jennifer is a CEO of Linkage, a SHRM company, and the author of the new book, In Her Own Voice, A Woman's Rise to CEO. Jennifer is a fellow member of Marshall Goldsmith's 100 Coaches and is a powerful voice on inclusion for leaders and organizations. And I've known Jennifer for a while, and let me tell you, as great as her book is, she's even a more delightful and great person. Jennifer, thank you for finding the time to be on our podcast. We are over the moon.
Chester and Adrian, there is no place I would rather be than with you in this moment.
Well, we are delighted to get to know you even better. Like Chess says, we've known you for quite a few years and I've been big fans of you and your work. So let's start with why on this issue that we're talking about. Why are there so few women at the highest levels of leadership?
It goes back generations and, for women and other underrepresented populations, we simply haven't had the same opportunity. And, whether it's the way we were raised, what we saw in our corporations, in our communities, in our spiritual environments, the path to leadership for women is just different and it's harder. I thought it was important to tell that story because, frankly, we at Linkage have been working on this issue. We call it a leadership crisis, a business crisis. We've been working on it for 25 years.
Wow. Wow. You know, in your book, you talked about COVID, that it hit women leaders like a tsunami. Quite the graphic description there. I said, destroying the progress that women have made over the last few decades. Why did it hit women so much harder? And explain that. Now, how do we get back to that more positive place for women in leadership?
I like to say there was the downside of COVID, that tsunami, but there was also this upside of COVID with this awareness. So let's start at the downside first. It's been very well documented that women lost a disproportionate share of the jobs. Interestingly, college-educated women did not leave the workforce or lose their jobs. But what happened with those who stayed was, in addition to the first shift, the day jobs that we all have that take an awful lot, a large percentage of our time, women also have the burden of what we call the second shift. The disproportionate, up to 3 hours per day, it spiked during COVID, more than men, of the home care, the child care, the elder care. But what also happened during COVID was the third shift. And the third shift was the office care. Again, the lion's share of, or lioness's share, as I say, responsibility for the prioritization, the work-life balance, the dealing with burnout for the staff. And as Black Lives Matter and the social injustice spiked in 2020, it was also the share of the DEI work, the sponsorship work. So that was the downside. I'll talk about the upside in a moment. Any thoughts before I do?
No, jump in. Yeah, tell us the good one.
I'm learning on these podcasts, it's good to pause to allow our host to jump in.
No worries.
Okay, so here is the upside. The upside is it created this awareness, this awakening of what women face and frankly have always faced, but it was a little bit more of a secret. We weren't so comfortable talking about our children, talking about our lives outside of work, talking about the burden that was leading to the burnout even before COVID. And so with the tsunami also came, on Zoom rooms, this kind of awareness and equity of all of us in boxes, maybe not looking our best, maybe not being our best, but seeing what women were facing differently than men.
You know, I just want to jump in really quick before we move on here. This idea, too, of the additional burden and awareness. Was it the fact that people were looking into your home and they could see the chaos behind the camera, as well as that missing element when people came back to work saying, hey, you know, Jennifer was the one that really kind of took care of the work-life balance. She was the one that made sure that we were sensitive to underrepresented and so on. Did I get that right?
So definitely the awareness of, oh gosh, and frankly for all of us, and I want to make sure that men are acknowledged too, that there is a real life outside of who we were or who we are when we go into our office. Women more so than men have spent their entire careers assimilating or conforming or trying to fit in to the leadership majority, which, and I don't think we should hide it. It is 70%+ men and largely white men. And we've spent a lot of years trying to dress and talk and executive presence and confidence and trying to assimilate into that majority. What happened during COVID was that all of that was stripped away actually very quickly. And women realized, wait a minute, I can do my jobs in this virtual environment, now hybrid environment. I can do it differently. But in some ways, their ambition has now skyrocketed because we see a different path forward. When we returned back to the office, and again, this is a wildly debated topic right now with CEOs about what is forced and what is not forced. But what we know to be true is that women rate flexibility in how they work, when they work, where they work, more highly than men. It is the single highest rated consideration when staying with a job or moving toward a job in this post-COVID era.
That's interesting. Yeah, and it also leads me to, I wanted to talk about, as I was going through the book, there was a, you know, you spend a good chunk of the book about overcoming hurdles, which is very practical. It's great that you dig right in. And one, I think it's the first one too, you talk about is quieting the voice of judgment, that inner critic, certainly not unique to women, but something that you say women are facing a lot. So walk us through the idea, explain the idea then how we do maybe overcome this.
And I love that you raised that, Adrian, in the context of a podcast called Anxiety at Work, because that inner that inner critic, and we all have it. So just quickly, it's that voice of judgment. It's that critical voice that demeans us when it's pointed at ourselves, but it also can be critical and judgmental of others when it's pointed out. And that voice of our head really talks to us throughout the course of the day. The question is, how loud is it? And we know that it's louder for women. And does it prevent you from taking action, from pursuing your dreams? And we know for sure that it does so for women more so than men. Now, I'll give you a very quick example because I think it's good to illustrate what that voice sounds like. And it often for women specifically, it sounds like you're not good enough or worthy. You're not ready. You shouldn't. Ask that question in a meeting, ask for that bonus raise or promotion. So that voice in our head can prevent us from taking action to fulfill our dreams in our careers or in our lives. And my voice was very loud when I, you know, it's usually spikes when you're afraid or you're uncomfortable. Whether for me, it was my first time CEO role or more recently writing a book, my inner critic spikes. So how do you get over it? But first, let me pause. Is there anything that you'd like to add about the inner critic?
You know, we've talked a lot about this, that inner voice. Make your inner voice your best friend. And it was so funny. I was just having a conversation with my wonderful wife, Heidi, last night. We were talking about our inner voices. And she said, you know, you're often very critical of yourself. And I said, well, you know, my inner voice is you. I was kidding, of course. And she, you should have seen her face like, oh my gosh, you've got to be kidding me. And I said, yes, I am. It is so important. I thought the point that you made about the inner voice and then when it projects outward as well, I hadn't thought of that before, that our inner voice that's critical of us can often be turned outward to the people that we work with and the people around us, you know, our family, our friends, our coworkers. That's really an interesting a concept. I hadn't thought of that before. Thank you.
Yeah. And in the book, we talk about one up and one down. So when that inner critic is pointed at you, you are one down on yourself. Right. But when it's pointed outward and you are kind of the holier than thou, and it might sound like he should know that by now, or what was she thinking? Right. Or I'm dreading this meeting. And so when you use the word should pointed at yourself or others, that's usually a trigger. Here's the trick. What you think and feel what that inner voice is saying to you inside is driving what you say and do. So we think that we're being very stealth by keeping our inner voice inside of us. But if it's pointed outward at others, it will surely impact your relationships and probably your reputation and your brand as well.
Yeah. So how do you turn that around? How do you change the narrative? What have you seen?
So we have a four-step approach, and the trick is to go through the cycle ever faster, right? And minimize that time. So the first is to become aware. Now, oftentimes we move through life, you know, very unaware of the inner critic. So it's helpful, Chester. I'm not sure you actually named your inner voice Heidi, but it's good.
I wouldn't do that.
Step one, don't make your inner voice your spouse. Yeah. Okay. Got it.
So sometimes you can become aware yourself. Sometimes it's helpful to have that shown to you by others who care about you. So in the case of my inner critic around putting my hat in the ring for the CEO job, it was two men in my life I really cared about. They were peers of mine who said, Jennifer, why are you saying things to yourself? And my inner critic was saying, I'm not ready. I need to be properly groomed. I haven't run the P&L down to the net income line, blah, blah, blah. You're not worth it. You're not. And why do we think we can do it, but you don't? And so they helped me become aware that my inner critic was paralyzing me from really fulfilling my dream job over these last 5 years. So become aware. Second is to pause. So once you become aware, to stop and start to reflect. And that third piece is to become compassionate with yourself or compassionate with others. In my example of the CEO story, my inner critic was also telling me that I couldn't be the kind of mom I wanted to be with this big job. And so to find that compassion, maybe it's that I'm just afraid of stepping into the role of a CEO because of the unknown. Maybe I'm afraid that my kids who were at pretty formative ages in elementary, middle, and high school, I would miss out. So once I could become compassionate, then I could become curious. And I could talk to my family and my kids about my fears and say, this is what this inner voice is telling me. Is it well-founded? I mean, I was the type of mom I wanted to be as GMs and publicly traded companies of business units. Is this going to be that different? And so that cycle, if I can shorten the cycle from weeks to days to minutes or seconds, then I can quiet the inner critic. We never silence it.
Such great advice. I so appreciate the practicality of that. Four steps, right? And you can run through that. Okay, so you are a coach. You coach lots of people. You've coached young people as well and mentored young people. So what advice would you have for women that are going through kind of what you're going through, and especially for younger women in the workplace to help them overcome and make that pathway forward a little easier? What do you tell them?
I think I'll put it in the context of what our data and research shows are the three highest hurdles for women. Now, the inner critic and the seven hurdles are well documented in the book. We don't have time for all of them. So I'm going to hone in on just three very quickly. And if we have time, I'll pause between each one. So 1 minute each. The very highest hurdle that women face is what we call proving your value. Another way of saying it is over rowing the boat. And women, by and large, have this tendency to put their head down, take on more and more and more, say yes to a lot of things, whether it's at work or home or in the community, and then fall into the perfectionist trap of trying to do it all really well. And the hope, of course, is that over time, people will notice and they will get X. The money, the job, the title, the promotion, the resources, the flexibility, the help. That rarely ever happens. And so I really encourage women to overcome the second hurdle I'll talk about, which is clarity, to get really clear about what your aspirations are and then say yes to the things that align to those aspirations. And it's okay to say no to the things that don't. I often say no is a complete sentence.
Yeah. You know, it is so interesting that you bring this up about they know who I am, they'll see my work, and I'll be rewarded. And to your point, it rarely ever happens. I had a dear friend in an organization we worked with before, and guy was great. He was a great mentor for me. I was in sales. He was my sales manager. As opportunities would come, I'd say, hey, you're going to pitch that, right? And he'd say, well, no, they know who I am. They know I'm here. And I went, you're a knucklehead. They got a million things on their plate. They don't sit back and say, hey, I wonder what Jack's doing or Jake or Susan, or they're worried about their stuff. You've got to jump right in. Some of the best advice my dad ever gave me in a job interview is he said, I want you to remember three things, Chester. I want you to ask for the job. I want you to remember to ask for the job. And I want you to never forget to ask for the job, you know? And I remember interviewing for a job in college, and I asked for the job like 20 times. And at the end of the interview, I said, what's the one thing you're going to remember about this interview with me? And she says, that you really want this job. I said, exactly. And I got the job, you know? So I think that advice alone in telling people, look, A, you are worthy. You are good enough. You've got a great resume. Put your hand in the ring. And if you get it, great. And then if you don't get it, you have no regrets. Are you finding that that's a big issue with women in particular? The regret piece that I should have pitched. I should have been more forceful. And I wasn't.
So I love that you teed this right up. The third highest hurdle is making the ask. And oftentimes when I say to women, well, what is it that you really want? Again, is it the job or is it the flexibility, resources, money? Oftentimes they will say, well, I can't ask for that. Well, why not? You know, it wouldn't play well with the person I'm asking, or I'm not sure I deserve that much. And you know, like, it's a very well documented fact that that has actually in fact led to the pay inequity in our country, which is very, very severe. So I spend a lot of time saying, well, wait a minute, it's important, like, how you make the ask. And so we write in the book about how you actually gather the data, you make the business case, you choose the right forum to make the ask. I tell a story about how my daughter made a very important ask for her college internship over Slack and thought with a thumbs up emoji she was all good, and she wasn't good. She actually was denied that ask, but she just used the wrong forum. So we it's important how you do it, but what's even more important is that you do it again and again and again, because then you build the muscle.
Right. That's great. That's great advice, Jennifer. Hey, how do people learn more about your work? I can see them wanting to find out more about you. Where would you send them?
I am really good on LinkedIn. So go to Jennifer Shear McCollum on LinkedIn and find me and then start a conversation. If you want to know more broadly about Linkage's work, you can go to shrm.org, shrm.org/ In Her Own Voice. And you can buy the book on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, or your favorite bookstore or airport.
That's right. And if they haven't been seeing, if our listeners haven't been seeing In Her Own Voice everywhere, you're missing, you know, you're living under a rock. So you've done great in your marketing, getting it out there. So I'm curious. Okay, you've done a lot of research here. You knew that there was a big issue here with women rising in the workplace to leadership positions. But what surprised you in the research? Not just the stats we've shared, but is there something else that you didn't expect to find when you began an in-depth study of women in business?
So like I said, Adrian, we've been tracking this over 25 years. So what we're always looking for with our data scientist is what are the trends and what is changing? So I think what surprised me the most was that in this COVID and post-COVID era, there were a couple of hurdles that weren't even the highest hurdles, but the way we were positioning them and the way to overcome them has shifted and pretty dramatically. And I'll give you one specific example. And we've touched on it a little bit. It's called recognized confidence. And in the past, you know, maybe 10, you know, even 5 years ago, we would work with women to help build them up, build their confidence, help them overcome the imposter syndrome. It's so well documented that women tend to lose their confidence pre-middle school when compared to boys. And if they get it back at all, it's kind of in their mid-30s. And so we know it's a big gap. But what we have learned at Linkage is you cannot beat confidence into someone any more than you can beat imposter syndrome out of them. So we've really shifted our thinking to this idea of how do you ensure that your excellence is seen, that a light is shining on you. And this gets to the self-promotion piece, kind of make the pitch, Chester, like you just said. And if you're not comfortable self-promoting, surround yourself with people who will support you and lift you up and shine that light onto you until you believe it yourself.
You know, isn't that interesting? You know, as an author now, What's the one thing that you want all over your book? Endorsements, right? So, you know, it's always better for somebody else to brag about you than you brag about yourself. And yet, you know, the mentor for all three of us here on this podcast is Marshall Goldsmith. And what does Marshall always say? If Jennifer McCollum became incredibly famous and influential, would the world be a better place? And of course, the answer is a resounding yes. So good for you. Make the ask, promote. Okay, so we're coming close to our time here, and we're always interested in self-care. So what do you do to make sure that your confidence is there, that you feel good about asking? You know, you and I were part of a Connect group with 100 coaches and got to know each other's stories pretty well. There were times in your career where, you know, you were under a lot of pressure and stress and the crazy things that happened. So having gone through all that and where you are now, what are some of your self-help, self-care practices that resonate that you could share with our listeners?
And I'm going to start right with what you said, Chester, that Connect group is one example. I have the Visionista group, the Wine Mama group. I have different support networks that I have surrounded myself with. And my spouse, of course, is one, and family, but for different needs and different reasons. And so that is my primary source of healthcare, self-care, is what is the help and support that I surround myself with when I need it. If I only have a few minutes, my self-care is just like I did with you all before we started, just some quiet, deep breathing. And if I have a little more time, it's exercise along with that. But I don't think anything matches the support groups that I surround myself with, much like the 100 coaches that lift me up.
Yeah, it's an amazing community. But I do want to mention that Jennifer has shared with me that in particularly stressful days when she goes out to hit a tennis ball, that is a great release. I've often gone to play tennis and say, I'm going to pretend that this tennis ball is the face of the person I'm really having trouble with. And it is very therapeutic just to smack that ball, isn't it?
There's something about, just for me, being in nature. So I am just getting ready to head to Colorado for a week of family skiing. Wonderful. And I'm, you know, I am intending to spend more and more of my life in the mountains. And again, the different phases of life, you have different degrees of flexibility. And so I'm really thinking about, what does self-care look like in this next phase of life as my children are now growing and just about a couple more years before the last one leaves the nest.
Oh, this is great. Hey, I noticed we're at time. Give us a last takeaway. If you had a minute to say to women listening, when you think about what you've learned, anxiety with their rise, what last thought would you give people?
There's nothing more important than clarity on your aspirations, on your dreams. When I ask women to paint a picture of what success looks like, most often they will say, I don't have time. I've never thought about it. What if I put it out there and don't get it? Isn't that worse? And what I would like to leave with for all of us, whether it's the individual, the team, or the organizational level, clarifying your aspirations allows the universe to conspire and help.
What a great, what a great closing thought. That is so, so profound and simple, but profound. And so few people do this. Thanks, Jennifer. This has been just amazing. We've learned from you as always and loved having you on the podcast today.
Yeah. Go find her book at Fine Bookstores Everywhere. Jennifer McCollum. Follow her on LinkedIn. Time with Jennifer is always time well spent. Thank you so much, Jen.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Well, Jess, another great podcast, another great guest, and Jennifer, a good friend of ours, says, first and foremost, look, we have to acknowledge the path is harder for women. And then COVID hit. There's a lot going on that we have to be more aware of the women in our lives and what they're facing as they try to rise in the corporate world.
You know, it's so interesting. When COVID hit, I think we were all just thrown for such a loop that we weren't paying as much attention to the nuances and so on. Yeah. If you were a woman, you were. And, we were negligent in all of that. But that first, second, and third shift, the realization that women in the office were doing a lot more. And then when everything shifted back to the home, that burden became even greater. Yeah. Were we appreciative of that? She talked about the upside as well, that that awareness was heightened. And all of a sudden people thought, hey, this is a bigger deal than we thought. I was so engaged around the inner voice.
Yeah.
I thought, you know, I've done a lot of thinking about that. You and I've talked a lot about that. I'd never talked about how that inner voice impacted your outward, your attitude and the way you interact with people and so on. Yeah. That inside out voice, that what you think about drives what you say and what you do. Now, I've often thought of that, but I haven't thought about that negative voice being such a strong driver. So I so appreciated her coaching me up on that.
Yeah, no, it's great. You know, and what is that inner voice telling us? You know, you're not good enough. You're not ready. You shouldn't. And so what do we do to turn that around? I like the four steps. First off, be aware. This is happening. It's okay. You know, our inner voice is there. We're not going to shut it off, but we can turn it down. You pause and reflect. You're more compassionate with yourself or if there's others involved. And you're more curious. You know, talking about your fears. You can't just, it's very easy to say, well, I'm just going to turn the narrative into a positive. I'm ready. That's easier said than done sometimes. But what we can be is compassionate and curious and see how we can move forward. So I thought that was just terrific.
Yeah, I didn't realize, you know, in all her research and all her data, and she's very data-driven and a great researcher, right? Is this idea how quickly women lose their confidence, that it starts in middle school. Or pre-middle school, she said. And you don't get it back until your 30s. Now, wow, that's a long time to be feeling diminished and not ready and so on.
And we hear that with men. You know, men will apply for a job even if they're only 20% qualified, where women won't apply if they're 80% qualified.
Yeah, or 120% qualified, you know, overqualified. Yeah. Just ask, what the heck, you know? We're such knuckleheads. I appreciated her support networks. You know, when she says how I take care of myself, she's in all these different networks, whether it's the 100 Coaches support group or Connect group and the Wine Mamas and her tennis group and on and on. And then, of course, communing with nature. We've heard that so many times, taking time to just go to the mountains, go skiing, and go for a hike, go for a swim, whatever it might be. I'm a big fan of that spiritual connection.
I saw this is probably the heart of what she talked about, the three highest hurdles for women right now. First off, proving your value over and over. And as she says, then just hoping somebody notices.
Right.
We've, you know, and I deal with this in the coaching. I'm coaching somebody right now who doesn't brag on themselves. That's as I'm hearing in the 360s. You know, nobody else is going to brag on for you. I loved your story of, you know, your boss who says, oh, they know who I am. No, they're worried about their own stuff. So prove your own value, but then brag on it. Secondly, be clear about your aspirations. What a important concept. And finally, as you said, too, make the ask.
Yeah. Yeah. Clarity. That came out time and time again. And I'm sure that's and she said, that's the one takeaway I want you to have. Be clear about your aspirations and then go for it. Well, we have wonderful people that support us in our network, don't we? Brent Klein, our wonderful producer that takes it all and makes it digestible and interesting and hopefully more listenable than the original. Christy Lawrence, who finds all our amazing guests and to all of you who listen in that have taken time. You could be doing a lot of things with your time, and you took the time to listen to our podcast. For that, we are very grateful. If you liked it, share it with your friends and family. We hope that these are ideas that will help people tamp down their anxiety and create a better life at work and at home. And we'd love you to visit thecultureworks.com. We've got all kinds of free resources there to help you and your team thrive.
We certainly do. And we love speaking to audiences around the world, virtually or in person, on the topics of resilience, teamwork, culture, leadership. Give us a call. We'd love to talk to you about your event. So until next time, Chess, I'm going to give you the last word. We want to thank everybody for joining us today.
Yeah, just listen, be good to yourself, you know, make your inner voice your best friend and go out and do something fun today. Lower your anxiety, be of service, commune with nature, whatever it might be. That's our hope for you today. Take care, and we hope to see you again next time. Cheers.